As Israel pushes ahead with a genocidal war on Palestinians in Gaza, Hamas calls for international probe into mass graves found in the besieged strip. The Hezbollah resistance movement targets Israeli military positions in southern Lebanon with missiles after Israeli warplanes launch airstrikes in the area. And U.S. police crack down on pro-Palestinian protesters as university students hold massive rallies urging Washington to end its military and financial support for the Israeli regime. Our top story, Gaza has come under fresh air and artillery strikes as Israel remains intent on its genocidal campaign. The regime's warplanes bombed areas of al-Nusayrat and al-Maghazi refugee camps in central Gaza, and to the north, Israeli artillery shelled an area near Beit Lahia. The eastern part of Rafah to the south is also witnessing constant artillery shelling, as a senior Israeli official says the military is moving ahead with its planned ground invasion of the city there. Israel launched its onslaught on Gaza back on October 7th, and over 34,300 Palestinians have thus far been killed. Most of those killed have been women and children. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called for an immediate, independent, and international probe into mass graves found under Gaza hospitals. Now, the movement urged international organizations, including the UN, to form an independent commission to investigate Israel's heinous crimes and to also send in specialized forensic teams to help identify and recover the bodies. Hamas warned that such crimes should not be ignored and their perpetrators should not be provided with any cover to help them escape punishment. Palestinian civil defense officials have reported evidence of field executions in mass graves. They say a number of the bodies had their hands bound while some others still had medical tubes attached to them, indicating that they were patients have been buried, may have been buried alive. The World Food Program warns famine is imminent in northern Gaza. This as Israel continues to bar aid deliveries to the besieged territory. Earlier in our news review program, we discussed this issue with our guests. Have a listen. And now welcome everyone to the news review program where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. The World Food Program warns famine is imminent in northern Gaza as Israel continues to bar aid delivery to the besieged territory, exacerbating an already dire humanitarian situation.
We're still heading towards a famine. We haven't seen that paradigm shift that is needed to avert a famine. We need more volume, more predictability, and a sustained effort to get more diverse assistance into the north.
Saku added the current aid flow into a blockaded territory is significantly less than what is desperately required. Israel has been waging a starvation war in parallel to its genocidal onslaught, which started in early October. Some 2 million Gazans are struggling to get access to food amid Israeli restrictions on the delivery of humanitarian aid. International aid groups have time and again warned the besieged territory is progressively moving toward famine and is becoming unfit for human life. Joining us now for our program is Booker Ngisa, member of the Kenya-Palestine Solidarity Movement, joining us out of Nairobi, and Sondos Al-Assad, Lebanese journalist, joining us from Beirut. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess we'll start there in Kenya. Mr. Booker, pleasure to have you in the program, sir. We've heard time and again it is unacceptable to use food as a weapon of war, yet with diplomatic cover from the U.S., the Israelis continue to do it on a daily basis in Gaza. Your initial thoughts, please.
Primarily, what the Zionist regime is conducting in Gaza is not something that is unprecedented on what we call settler colonialism. The British used the same tactic to have collective punishment when they were undergoing their colonization exercise in Kenya, and they rounded up millions of Kenyan people in concentration camps and starve them to death. So what is happening in Gaza confirms that the Zionist project is a project of settler colonialism, where the only rule that play is the rules that favors the colonial project, which is the Zionist regime called Israel. And they do not just violate the basic human principles, but they violate several international laws, including United Nations declarations.
Sotos, your thoughts on the Israeli regime, how can they possibly justify depriving women and children that have nothing to do with this conflict and Israel's onslaught on the civilian population of Gaza, deprived of much needed food? You very well know when you have a starving population, bodies and the health becomes compromised. It leads to an induction of a bunch of other diseases into that population because people are weakened. And when you have famine, you have dozens of other diseases that follow. Your initial thoughts, please.
Yes, as Brother Brooker has mentioned, that you are dealing with a colonial regime that knows nothing about ethics of war or the doesn't respect the international law and doesn't respect the controls of conflicts. What the Israeli regime is doing in Gaza against the Gazan people is enforcing them into surrender by starving them into death. That's why, because they have failed to achieve any of their objective of the war. They have failed despite all the American weapon aids and despite all the Western support since the beginning of this genocidal war.
Thank you both for joining us on the program. Burka and Gessa joining us there from Kenya, and Sondos Al-Assad joining us out of Lebanon. And this brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now. Welcome back, everyone. Now back to our top story, where Gaza has come under fresh air and artillery strikes. Regime warplanes have bombed areas of the Nusayrat and Maghazi refugee camps, and also Israeli military personnel are talking more today about the imminent invasion of the southern city of Rafah. And to bring us up to date, we're going to swing over to Deir Abalah in central Gaza, where we're joined by Moti Abu Musabe, our correspondent. Good afternoon, Moti. What can you tell us?
Yes, Danny. Actually, the Israeli strikes and attacks are still incessant against all areas of Gaza Strip. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes actually carried out several air strikes over the last night and even over the last couple of hours. Dozens of the Palestinian residential buildings were completely destroyed after they were pounded by those air strikes, in addition to the chronic artillery shelling that was maintained all the night against the northern part of Al-Nusayrat refugee camp and even Al-Maghazi and Al-Buruj refugee camp. Those areas have been subjected to continuous and incessant Israeli attacks all the time, leaving, as I have mentioned, dozens of the Palestinian residential buildings completely destroyed and leveled to the ground. In the meantime, while when it comes to Gaza City, the Israeli warplanes also intensified their air strikes and attacks against multiple residential buildings. The last attack actually was carried out over the last couple of hours after the Israeli warplanes targeted and destroyed a building or a facility belongs to Red Cross Society in Al-Wahda Street inside Gaza City. At least three Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed in that building as they were taking shelter inside that building. So it's another crime for the Israeli occupation forces to commit against the Palestinian civilians and the displaced Palestinians who are looking for any place just to hide and to get the protection from those continuous non-stop Israeli attacks. In the meantime, and over the last night, the Israeli occupation forces also committed another appalling massacre after targeting multiple cars belong to the popular committees. And these popular committees are responsible and they are in charge of securing the humanitarian necessities and the humanitarian supplies to be distributed and to be delivered to the needy people inside Gaza City and the northern part of Gaza Strip. 8 Palestinian civilians were tragically unalived and killed over that attack, and it's another crime added to the continuous and the record of the Israeli crimes committed left, right, and center against the Palestinian people. And when it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against Beit Lahia City. As you know, that dozens of the Palestinian residential buildings were destroyed and targeted by those attacks. And here, as you know, when it comes to Khan Yunis City, the Palestinian civil defense crews are still performing more activities and searching for more Palestinian dead bodies who were, as you know, buried inside those massive graves in the yards of the Nasser Medical Complex. According to Gaza's self-defense system, that at least 400 Palestinian civilians or Palestinian dead bodies were extracted and pulled out from those massive graves. 58% of those dead bodies actually are still unidentified, while at least 20 Palestinian dead bodies were believed that they were buried alive inside those massive graves. So we are talking about continuous Israeli crimes that are still, yes.
What have led the investigators or who is making that determination, what has led them to believe that people, that patients or people there were actually buried alive in these mass graves?
Yes, as you know, that they are, I mean, that the main activity of those civil defense crews is completely relying on digging inside the yards of the Nasser Medical Complex and extracting those dead bodies from those massive graves. And after they are checking those dead bodies, they can find out that many of those dead bodies actually were buried alive. I mean that they can distinguish between the dead bodies that were executed and buried while they were dead and those Palestinian dead bodies that were buried alive. I mean that they have multiple signs on their bodies that indicate clearly that they were buried alive, because as you know that they have a wide experience due to the repetitive operations of extracting such dead bodies from the massive graves, particularly when it comes to Al-Shifa Medical Complex. They have experienced such cases, and they can identify those dead bodies that were executed in cold blood than those that were buried alive inside those massive graves. I mean that they have multiple signs that could indicate this situation.
Okay, and before we let you go, Moti, there's a senior Israeli official that says it is imminent that even their closest allies, the Europeans, Washington, have told Tel Aviv not to go through with this imminent ground invasion of the southern city of Rafah, that it seems like it is going to happen and is going to happen soon. What would that invasion look like, Moti?
Yes, as you know, that it goes without saying that the Israeli occupation forces are going forward in order to attack Rafah and to conduct their wide-scale operation against Rafah City. And no one can deny that having this operation put in place means even beyond catastrophic situation for the Palestinian people there, because as you know, Rafah still absorbs at least 1.5 million Palestinian civilians. The vast majority of them are women and children, and they have no place to go. And even when it comes to the Israeli attacks, having this place crowded like this way, this means that any airstrike, any attack against those areas actually would leave thousands of the Palestinian casualties. And this is actually what we are experiencing, what we are witnessing these moments. We have witnessed a lot of the Israeli airstrikes against Rafah City, and every airstrike actually leaves a lot of the Palestinian casualties left behind. The vast majority of them are women and children. Needless to mention that Rafah crossing would be completely shut down, which will deprive 2.3 million Palestinian civilians of their basic humanitarian necessities. This means that the current situation is due to be even more catastrophic for the people, and it would be that there would be a surge on the Palestinian casualties left behind those airstrikes and attacks.
You know, Moti, every day we think this nightmare cannot get any worse, but every day somehow it finds a way to do exactly just that, get much, much worse for Gazans. Stay safe, Moti. We'll talk to you soon. Moti Abu Musavvidh joining us from Deir al-Balah. Israeli occupation forces have carried out fresh incursions into several towns across the occupied West Bank, including Nablus and Jenin. Reports coming out of occupied territories show the regime forces have abducted a number of Palestinians during their raids. And earlier we spoke to our Ramallah correspondent, Mona Candio, for the latest.
They arrested a female teacher, 33-year-old Jihad Nakhli. This female teacher was arrested, and a mother of three, of course, was arrested from her home. It's not clear why she had been detained by the Israeli forces. And two more Palestinians were arrested from Al-Jalazon refugee camp. The Israeli soldiers stormed into a number of homes and searched into their contents. They destroyed many Palestinians' homes' contents, of course, during this military raid. Also today, Friday, the Israeli troops stormed several areas across the occupied West Bank. The Israeli soldiers raided Jenin, the town of Ya'bad, as well as Qalqilya, a number of Palestinian towns near Qalqilya. The Israeli forces stormed Tulkarem, as well as Nablus and the Balata refugee camp. During the military raid to Balata refugee camp at the city of Nablus, exchange of fire had taken place between the Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces. Palestinian fighters issued a statement, Palestinian resistance groups, saying that their fighters have clashed with the Israeli soldiers and tried their utmost to prevent the incursion to inside the refugee camp of Balata and to prevent celebrations in the Maqam Yusuf or Yusuf Tomb in Nablus.
Israel and Hezbollah resistance movement have engaged in fresh round of exchange of fire along the southern Lebanese border. The Israeli military carried out airstrikes on two Lebanese villages, and in response, Hezbollah targeted the regime's military positions in occupied Sheba farms. Our Beirut correspondent Mariam Saleh reports.
There is systematic destruction of the civilian residential areas in all of the bordering towns. We see daily almost shelling of the towns of, for example, surrounding Farshuba Hills, which is the Farshuba town, the Sheba town. You have also the towns of Aita Shab, Kfarkila, Khiyam. You always have on a daily basis that sort of those sort of attacks. You have Ramya, Blood, for example. The last 2 days, the Israelis heavily bombarded most of the natural reserves and the green spaces and the woods surrounding the towns of Aita Shab, Ramya, Al-Mashab as well. They also targeted areas which are residential, destroying the houses of the population over there. Fortunately, recently we have not had any civilian casualties in the last round of Israeli heavy bombardment. But there were, of course, this is a continuous and systematic method that the Israelis use always in destroying the civilian population and the civilian infrastructure, which has caused, of course, a total blackout in some areas, in some cities. We've seen that they have also launched a lot of phosphorus bombs lately. Hezbollah's operations have also continued. Hezbollah has said in the last round of operations that this is also in retaliation for the continuous Israeli assaults, not only in Gaza, but also on the Lebanese town.
Yemeni protesters poured into the streets of the northern city of Sada in yet another rally in support of Gazans. Protesters chanted the slogans against Israel and its main supporter, the United States. They've been holding rallies on Friday since the Israeli war on Gaza broke out in early October. They've also voiced support for their army's operations against Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea. That's a day after a leader of the Ansarullah resistance movement promised stronger operations. Yeah, demonstrators also voiced support for the army's attacks on American and British ships in retaliation for the two countries' airstrikes on Yemen. U.S. and U.K. claimed that the airstrikes aim to protect international shipping. And that's it for your latest here, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. Defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
On late Saturday, April 13th, the Islamic Republic of Iran began Operation True Promise by launching explosive drones and firing missiles at Israeli-occupied territory. The Iranian salvo of more than 300 drones and missiles came almost 2 weeks after Israel targeted Iran's consulate in Damascus that resulted in the assassination of a number of high-ranking Iranians, including General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, one of Iran's most senior commanders in its Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, and Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi, his deputy. Operation True Promise was Tehran's first direct attack on the Israeli regime after a long period of strategic patience, a new chapter in the history of the region. A few hours before Iran launched Operation True Promise, we asked political analyst Mr. Sadullah Zarei about the possibility of a direct action by Iran against the Israeli regime.
Biden,
U.S. President Joe Biden, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and other top officials in the United States, as well as in Israel, have said that Iran would respond to the attack on its consulates in Damascus. Some have predicted that the response would be severe. When they say that the Islamic Republic would respond, it means that they are confessing to Tehran's ability to retaliate. So, Iran, in the eyes of its enemies, is both willing to and capable of taking action in retaliation against what the Israeli regime did to its diplomatic mission in Syria.
Iran's decision to retaliate against Israel from its own soil has raised many eyebrows, even as the attacks appear to be carefully calibrated to avoid a full-scale war.
We are seeking to deal a proper blow to Israel so that the regime would forget all about such reckless actions against Iran in the future. At the same time, we are not going to fan the flames of war. We don't want to escalate tensions in the region. So our strikes would be limited and calculated. In other words, we are going to take revenge without trying to drag the whole region into an all-out war. Our main aim is to deter the Israeli regime from threatening our interests in the region.
A direct attack by Iran on Israel was not believed to be on the cards. The Iranians had previously made clear that they were not seeking a war with Israel. In fact, Iran had never responded with such force to previous attacks, including many covert Israeli operations on its soil. This is Mr. Murtaza Makki, a political analyst based in Tehran.
After much speculation over the past 2 weeks, the Islamic Republic of Iran eventually took retaliatory action against Israel by sending tens of drones and missiles towards the regime's critical points. Iran's action has obviously changed the game. The Israelis were under the impression that Tehran would take action indirectly, through the resistance axis, for example, and would not put aside its strategic patience, but they were wrong, and as a result, the direct attack came as a shock to them.
Iran has plausible arguments for the retaliatory attack, which was a legitimate response to Israel's terrorist attack on the Islamic Republic's diplomatic premises in the Syrian capital. According to a statement issued by the Islamic Republic's mission to the United Nations, Iran's military action was based on Article 51 of the United Nations Charter concerning legitimate defense in response to the Zionist regime's aggression against our diplomatic premises in Damascus. Mr. Ahmad Momin-Yerad, professor of international law at Tehran University, has more to say.
The military action the Israeli regime took against Iran's consulate on April 1st is, according to international laws, an action against Iran's sovereignty. It's an illegal action under international laws. In this case, according to Article 51 of the UN Charter, Iran has the right of self-defense because an armed attack has occurred against the country. Prior to Operation True Promise, Iran had frequently asked the Security Council to take necessary measures against Israel's illegal action. But unfortunately, the Council did nothing in this regard. So Iran upheld its right of self-defense by launching an operation that was more defensive in nature than being retaliatory.
Top Iranian commanders warned Israel that the country would face a bigger attack if it retaliates against overnight drone and missile strikes. In the words of the commander-in-chief of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, the Zionist regime must stop its past behavior and learn from this attack. If the Zionist regime shows any response, our reaction will certainly be much harsher based on this new experience we have gained from their capabilities. Adding, from now on, if the Zionist regime attacks our interests, assets, figures, and citizens at any point, it will face counterattack from within the Islamic Republic of Iran. Mr. Mehdi Khorsan enumerated a list of subversive actions taken by Israel against the Islamic Republic over the past years.
Assassinating our nuclear scientists, taking acts of sabotage in our nuclear sites, abortive attempt against Barakat Pharmaceutical Group, supporting secessionists in border areas, orchestrating arson attacks in Mahidash bases in Kermanshah, attacking nuclear facilities in Karaj, Natanz and other places, recruiting spies and financing terrorists. These are some actions the Israeli regime has taken against Iran over the past four decades.
Operation True Promise was unprecedented in many aspects. It was the first direct military action taken by Tehran against the Israeli regime. But can it be a game changer? Mr. Khorsand told us that Iran's first direct action against Israel was inevitable.
وقتی گستاخی پا از حد فراتر می روند و رژیم صهیونیستی برای اولین بار
When the regime crossed our red lines and attacked our consulate for the first time, which is tantamount to attacking our soil, we had no option but to take a strong action. We had to shatter the regime's illusions that Iran wasn't afraid of it, and the country's strategic patience was out of fear or weakness. The fact is, whatever the regime had done prior to its attack on Iran's consulate did not require Tehran to take a direct military action against the regime.
The scale of Iran's attack, the diversity of locations it targeted, and weapons it used forced Israel to uncover the majority of anti-missile technologies the U.S. and the regime have across the region. A big achievement at low cost. Tehran did not use any weapons Israel didn't know it had. It just used a lot of them. Iran likely now has almost a full map of what Israel's missile systems looks like. As well as where in Jordan and the Persian Gulf the U.S. has installations. It also knows how long it takes to prepare them or how Israeli society responds. This is a huge strategic cost to Israel. While some Arab states are now being blasted by their people, particularly the Jordanian monarchy, for not doing anything to protect Gazans, but then going all out to protect Israel. Mr. Mackey told us why Tehran launched drones and missiles simultaneously.
Israel's system is multi-layer. The first layer is supposed to intercept rockets, the second layer to intercept mid-range missiles, and the third layer to intercept long-range missiles. By sending drones, Iran aimed at disrupting the first layer, and by sending missiles of different ranges, Iran managed to change the second and the third layers of the Iron Dome.
Iran can now reverse engineer all the intelligence it has gathered from this attack for future attacks if the occasion arises. That's why the U.S. and Israel will have to redesign their current model, which has been compromised. Before Iran's operation, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was moved to a bunker in Al-Quds. Zionist soldier vacations were canceled ahead of the attack, and all reservists were ordered to report for duty. Israeli forces issued warnings to settlers to avoid large gatherings while remaining close to shelters. Meanwhile, Israeli officials pleaded with their allies to do anything to stop Iran. From now on, the Israeli regime has to do all these things before taking any reckless action against Iranian interests.
The action Iran took against Israel showed just part of the country's defense capabilities. Iran has hypersonic missiles that can reach Israel in minutes. If Iran had used them, the blow to the regime would have been much more crushing. Over the past 2 weeks, Israel was a bundle of nerves, and you know, Netanyahu cannot keep going like this. In case of another attack by Israel, Iran would not wait for 2 weeks. Its response would be swift and severe. The fact is, we have entered a new phase of tensions in the region. Israel and its allies need to reconsider their plans. Any misstep can throw the whole region into further chaos, tension, and war. And don't forget, the victims of this situation would not be just regional countries, but also Western countries that have many interests in the region.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
To save its face, the Israeli regime has been trying to play down the significance of Operation True Promise by distorting the realities. But denying the damage doesn't undo the damage, does it? Commenting on Israel's response to the attack, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu posted on X, "We intercepted, we repelled, together we shall win." There's no doubt that Iran could carry out an operation in a large scale, but the attack was limited to the military bases of the Zionist regime, from the Golan Heights to the Negev Desert, that were used in the terrorist attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus.
این پایگاه نواتیم، پایگاه هوایی نواتیم اسرائیل که تقریبا در نیمه جنوبی سرزمین‌های اشغالی قرار داره.
The Nevatim Air Base is one of the most strategic bases of Israel and home to F-35 aircraft. By targeting this base, Iran sent a very important message to the Israeli regime that we are not afraid to launch direct attacks from our own soil. On the contrary, we can fearlessly send swarms of drones and missiles toward Israel, challenging its Iron Dome and striking our targets vehemently. We are ready for the ultimate goal of annihilating the child-killing regime.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said on Sunday that Iran gave neighboring countries and Israel's ally, the United States, 72 hours' notice it would launch the strikes. It means that the Islamic Republic was not after a surprise attack or dealing a bloody blow to Israel, but giving the regime a serious ultimatum. Thanks to the notice, Israel could prepare itself with the help of the U.S. and some other allies for Iran's attack. And yet, the regime was not fully successful in intercepting the drones and missiles. And it means a surprise full-force attack by Iran would land the regime in serious trouble. According to General Salami, dozens of ballistic and cruise missiles managed to break into deep layers of Israel's seemingly safe air defense system, impact the aerial coalition between the U.S., France, and Israel, and reach the designated targets. We asked Mr. Zari about the potential consequences of Iran's retaliatory attack. He said that Israel should be more afraid of them, not Iran.
سوال: آیا اسرائیلی‌هایی که نتونستن علی‌رغم حدود 88 روز
I've got a simple question to ask. Can an impotent regime like Israel stand against the Islamic Republic of Iran? The answer is no. How can a regime which is unable to defeat a resistance group like Hamas defeat Iran? As you know, Hamas is just a resistance group in Gaza, which has been under siege for years. The group has very limited facilities. It has no armed vehicles, no navy, no air force, no classic army. And yet the Israeli regime has failed to defeat this group over the past 6 or 7 months.
The Iranian missile and drone attacks came as a shock to settlers in the occupied territories, since the Israeli media had tried to pacify them for weeks, claiming that Iran's intention for retaliation was not true. However, at the stroke of midnight, both the Israeli media and settlers were gripped by fear. The operation has opened a new chapter for Iran in the fight against the Israeli regime. It included at least 4 waves of drone attacks. The retaliatory military operation also included the launch of a series of cruise and ballistic missiles, which were reportedly accompanied by simultaneous drone and missile strikes by the Axis of Resistance groups from Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon. According to official reports, Shahed 136 kamikaze drones that carry a relatively small warhead weighing some 50 kilograms were used in the attack on Israel. Moreover, the Shahed 238, which is powered by a turbojet rather than the propeller on the 136 model, was also used in the attack. The Emad long-range ballistic missile and the Pavit cruise missile were used to attack Israel. Iran also possesses Fatah, a hypersonic ballistic missile that could theoretically arrive in Israel in as little as 7 minutes, along with a cruise missile variant of the same family. There was no indication the missiles were used in the early Sunday attacks. After all, it was a slap on the wrist, and Iran's response to any further military action by Israel will be much greater. Iranian Parliament Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf said, The Iranian forces' deterrence and regret-inducing response delighted the hearts of every Iranian who cares about our honored country's security and glory. In a phone call with Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the attack night, U.S. President Joe Biden made clear the U.S. would not participate in any offensive operations against Iran, an implicit acceptance that a military confrontation with Iran would cost both Israel and the U.S. dearly.
The Americans know that they are very vulnerable in the region, and they don't want to engage with Iran. Needless to say, we are not after war with the Americans either. The other day, a White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby said that Israel's attack on Iran's consulate was legitimate, but in the same breath, he said that the action was reckless and against the United States policies. Why did he add that to his remarks? Because he is afraid of his country being dragged into war with Iran. The Americans didn't have a good time in Iraq or in Afghanistan, and they don't want to repeat the same mistake. And you know, these two countries are not comparable with Iran.
Operation True Promise has mocked Israel's invincibility myth, stripping the regime of its deterrence illusion. The Islamic Republic of Iran, under the leadership of Ayatollah Khamenei, has once again given a new momentum to the Palestinian cause.
With the great strength Iran showed, the country conveyed the message that we are capable of launching massive operations and any attack on our soil or consulates will be faced with crushing responses. The operation, in fact, sought to restore Iran's deterrence. I have to say that over the past years, Iran has been acting in a rational way and in accordance with international laws. It has never sought to begin war or open up new fronts in the region. Whatever the Islamic Republic has done so far has been defensive and preemptive.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had in his Eid al-Fitr sermon vowed to punish the Israeli regime for the mistake of targeting the Iranian diplomatic mission in Damascus. He made a similar warning a day after the attack was carried out earlier this month, saying the regime would be punished. The Islamic Revolution Guard Corps dubbed the operation True Promise to show Iran leader's seriousness on his vows of punishment for attacks by Israel and others.
By targeting Iran's consulate in Damascus, Israel tried to challenge Iran's deterrence. Given what Ayatollah Khamenei said at Eid al-Fitr sermons, it became clear that Iran would not let Israel go unpunished this time. Now, the region should brace itself for new military and political developments. What would be these developments? It all depends on how the Israeli regime would react to Iran's retaliatory attack and the stance the Americans are going to adopt.
Shortly after the retaliation, Iranians took to the streets at Palestine Square and in front of the University of Tehran in the capital, waving national flags and chanting slogans in support of the retaliatory attack. Similar demonstrations were held in other parts of the country. Rallies were also held on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the holy occupied city of Al-Quds, where Palestinians came out to celebrate after hearing news of the Iranian retaliation. People also took to the streets throughout various cities across the world, celebrating Iran's decisive retaliation against the Israeli regime.
Operation True Promise was recorded as the biggest missile operation as well as the biggest drone operation in the world. The operation cheered up the people of Palestine, the people of the region, and the people of the world, all the freedom-seeking people around the globe who take pity on the children and women of Gaza. The operation was designed in a way so as to avoid non-military targets and therefore collateral damage. It was a very precise and calculated operation.
On the eve of Iran's retaliatory attack, Israel suspended the ground invasion of the city of Rafah in southern Gaza because it did not know how, where, and when Iran would give its retaliatory response. The night Iran carried out Operation True Promise, no one lost his or her life to Israel's indiscriminate airstrikes as the regime was busy defending itself against Iran's retaliation. Iran, under the severest sanctions, did what the Arab coalition had failed to do over the past seven decades, to humiliate the Israeli regime and scare the life out of it. The rules of engagement have changed. Operation True Promise marks the beginning of a new era when the regime can no longer get away with murder. From now on, the regime's first mistake could be its last one, and there's absolutely harm in trying it. We asked Dr. Momin Irad if the Israeli regime has the right to launch a retaliatory attack against Iran in response to its retaliatory attack.
If we consider the case from the point of view of international laws, no, the regime has no right to attack Iran again. But the fact is, the regime has never abided by international laws and norms since its formation. It has crossed all the red lines and it has committed crimes unprecedented in history. The regime's history is brimmed with all kinds of violations of international laws, of human rights, you name it. It has a track record of illegal occupation of Palestine, invasion, killing, genocide, assassination, displacement of people, destruction of homes, and so on and so forth.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Till next time, take care.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qiraati. Please stay tuned. Why the religion of Islam emphasizes on the concept of consultation? The main reason to consult others is to have a strong basis. A strong basis in an argument causes confidence. A healthy society is the one that its people trust each other. Trust in different parts of a society makes it stronger. Even a simple promise to a child must be fulfilled in Islam, let alone to big promises in a community. Trust of a child to a father brings trust in a family, and the families form a society. Even a small promise to a child must be fulfilled. Promises between spouses must be fulfilled. Marriage gifts must be given to a wife. All these laws shows that Islam has rulings for different aspects of a society. Fulfillment of promises brings about confidence and trust in a society. Promises starts from the family, and they will have greater effects on larger scales in a society. All in all, the religion of Islam is based on mutual trust. Trust, if observed on both sides, will bring honor and dignity to a society. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qiraati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.